Diverging Paths, Part 2. The fourth story in Reentry, a Star Wars fanfiction series. Written by Flamethrower and read by Chantress. Coruscant. Republic Standard Date 5199. Fourth month. 12th day. Transcribed audio feed. Timestamp 0412. I take Anakin Skywalker as my Padawan learner. I said those words today. I stood in front of the council and claimed Anakin as my own, with Qui-Gon at my side. I should be happy. I should be. After all, hasn't the Force granted my fondest wish? A second chance to do the right thing? Of course, if someone had asked me years ago if I would wish for this, I don't know what I would have said. I think my ultimate desire, towards the end of my time on Tatooine, might have involved fine brandy and a dreamless night's sleep. Second chances were nothing but frivolous dreams that I couldn't afford. Still, the opportunity presented itself, and I took it. I would have been foolish not to. Instead of relief, I find that I'm holed up in my quarters. It's hours after midnight, with the only illumination provided by the glow from ever-passing traffic, and from buildings whose electronic facades never dim. I suppose you could say that I'm... What did Sol Kantar call it? Ah, yes. Burning the midnight oil. Quaint saying, but it was a quaint planet. It was our last mission, before the mud pit that was Kellan 6. We settled an agricultural dispute involving trade with three sectors out on the rim. I enjoyed it, and asked Qui-Gon if we couldn't retire out there once this Jedi thing was over. He laughed. I don't think he realized I was serious. Damn it. I'm digressing. Avoiding my own thoughts. I have to admit I've done it more often than I thought possible these past few months. Yoda keeps glaring at me. Probably suspects something of the sort, and is probably trying to decide when to hit me with that stick of his. I'll have to find that recipe for Nawfla cookies and give it to him before he gets nosy. Bribery has always worked very well with Master Yoda. Or at least it will give me a few days' leeway. And I can't stop doing it. I'm talking to myself in the middle of the night, and I'm still dodging painful truths. There it is, for posterity. Jedi Masters are flawed human beings. I'm avoiding sleep. With the cycle going, I wouldn't be getting much rest anyway. And I can't help but wonder, is it a sign, perhaps, that the cycle of nightmares began the day I decided I was going to train Anakin? My therapist says I'm not supposed to think negatively. I know what my friends would say. I know what Qui-Gon would say. It seems like anyone who has seen Annie and I interact believes that we have the strongest bond ever witnessed, and we still haven't even bothered to officially create a training bond. Or recreate it, as the case may be. They say it was meant to be. Force and gods as my witness, I'm starting to hate that phrase. Audio picks up faint sounds and unintelligible words. No clear recording available. The truth is, I'm afraid. I'm afraid that I'll fail Anakin as badly as I did once before. I can debate my experience with the best of the temple's philosophers. Was it a vision? A past life that I needed to recall, and my mind simply translated it the best way it knew how? A gift from the Force, giving me my life back? I think Jocasta and I have argued about them all. She does not quite know what to make of me any longer. She's not used to people younger than Dooku winning the argument. If you could call it winning. I stood before the council at the age of 16, certain that the entirety of my life was real. But with the passage of time, I find I'm less confident. Things have been different. Missions have been different. I expected this, but at the same time, those differences leave me struggling with my own doubts. At first, those changes made me happy, since I have actually done very little to alter some of the dire things that happened in the 4 years between my 16th and 20th birthdays. Now, those changes just make me nervous. There's a part of me that doesn't want it to have been real. Perhaps it was merely a vision, a dark representation of what might have happened if Anakin had been lost to us. A Force-sensitive that powerful, growing up as an angry, embittered slave. Yes, that could certainly have put a damper on things. Regardless of its reality, I'm still sitting here in the dark, afraid that I'll do the same wrong things over again. I ask myself if Anakin wouldn't have been better off with another master, one who could take that brilliance and mold it into the finest Jedi the Order has ever seen, without knowing any of the sordid details of his possible past. Anakin doesn't seem to remember much of it. Why weigh him down with the possibilities that I know of? I have too many questions, and know of too many possibilities, and I have no answers. I'm just a man burdened by a life he doesn't seem to have lived. Anakin will finish moving into the smaller Padawan room of my quarters tomorrow. Before, I could offer him very little. This time, he has friends to help him move, and two masters that want only the best for him. I keep telling myself that that's what I need to focus on. I can't do anything about events that haven't happened. All I can do is try to make sure that they never happen. Life would be so much simpler if I didn't think so damn much. End entry. The sharp rap on his door startled him, and only when Obi-Wan Kenobi lifted his head from the back of the couch did he realize he had fallen asleep at all. Bright light shining around the blinds told him he'd missed his typical dawn waking, and his mouth tasted like something had curled up and died in it. The knock on his door was repeated before he could contemplate hiding. "Come in," Obi-Wan said, giving up. The door opened and closed. A moment later, a steaming cup of caff appeared under his nose. "Oh, gods bless your very existence," Obi-Wan murmured, snatching the drink and taking a sip. There was enough sugar in the caff to class it as a dessert. Garen Mulne dropped down onto the couch next to him, smiling. "I can't make tea for shit, so enjoy the caff. Sleep much?" "A little. I spent most of the night talking to myself," Obi-Wan admitted. And you wonder why we think you're crazy, Garen replied, giving him a gentle nudge. You've got enough time for a shower and a change before Master Qui-Gon, your new Padawan, and a bunch of initiates descend upon this place, by the way. It's almost 11, Obi-Wan blurted in shock. It is 11, Garen corrected, grinning at him. Master Qui-Gon picked up on restful somnolence from your pair bond and pushed the scheduling back a bit. Restful? Obi-Wan repeated, his system lighting up as the caffeine hit his bloodstream like a launched missile. That was why he liked tea, thank you very much. Tea was subtle. Caff was a sledgehammer attached to a parade horn. You don't sound like that's a good thing. I figured after what happened the other morning, restful would be good. Garen neatly plucked the mug from Obi-Wan's hands and took a sip. Obi-Wan glared at him and stole it back. Actually, I'm thinking of enlisting a babysitter. Garen made a face. I elect it not be me. I'd love to help, but you need someone who can pin you down when you start hitting things. Obi-Wan rubbed at his face and resisted the urge to sigh. Sighing didn't help. Right. Shower for me, then, before the swarm of younglings shows up. Hey, Obi-Wan? Obi-Wan gave his friend a curious look. Yeah? Garen's expression sobered. You've got to do something about this, you know. Obi-Wan nodded. Believe me, I know. Jael Tirza awoke to find her face pressed into the cushions of her couch. She sighed, stretching as she sat up. As she suspected, the soup she'd made for herself was sitting on her table, stone cold. It wasn't the first time such a thing had happened, and probably wouldn't be the last, either. Her wrist chrono told her she'd slept only 7 hours. She stripped it off, rubbing at the red impressions left on her arm from trapping it between her body and the cushions too long. Not bad after a 20-hour shift, she mumbled, before using her forgotten tea, cold but not unpleasant, to rinse her mouth. She threw out her congealed dinner and went for a shower, dressing in civilian togs after tossing her tunics down the laundry chute. Tunics were all well and good, but she enjoyed her rare days off. Not that she ever stopped working. She had stepped into the role of a workaholic too long ago to quit now. She grinned at her reflection in the fresher mirror after combing out her long red hair, amused that she still stopped to consider such things as her waistline. She was only 2 years shy of her fifth decade, but repairing Jedi had kept her fit and trim, despite her lax physical training. When she'd eaten at last, and enjoyed a solid hour of uninterrupted meditation, Tirza turned her attention to the medical folder she'd brought home early that morning. Once upon a time, Obi-Wan Kenobi's medical file had been stored with the others in her office. Just another bit of data that she kept on hand to keep track of the hundreds of Padawans she considered her charges. Then, 4 years ago, a visibly distraught master had carried his unconscious Padawan into her ward, and everything changed. The folder had come out of the cabinet, to be quickly filled with physical copies of every bit of temple medical history there was to be had on Kenobi, Obi-Wan. It had remained on her desk ever since, one of the very few files that never made the return trek back into her office cabinet. At first, it had been mere curiosity. A case like the young Padawan's had not crossed her path before, and research into the temple archives told her there was nothing quite like it in the Order's history. Comas, mental injuries affecting the physical body, visions that incapacitated the victim. Terza could find mention of each of those. No file in the archives spoke of those things happening all at the same time, to the same patient, with such unprecedented results. 6 months after bringing Anakin Skywalker to the temple, Obi-Wan had darkened her office doorway once more, offering her tea with a shy smile. His foreknowledge of her had unnerved Terza, but she had buried it under professional curiosity that quickly passed into personal warmth. Obi-Wan was easy to like, with his wry sense of humor and quiet manner. He was not hard on the eyes, either, even then. She had transcribed the entire visit later, to keep accurate notes, but it had proven superfluous. She had never forgotten anything he told her. Obi-Wan sat down in one of her office chairs while Terza uttered happy sounds over the mug. The boy made her tea-making efforts seem amateurish. "Glad you like it," he said. Terza nodded, trying not to inhale it all at once. 10 hours into a shift that should have been a mere 8 hours meant that his gift couldn't have been better timed. "Thank you, yes." She gave him a quick, appraising look, intrigued by the changes even a mere 6 months had granted. His dark hair was much lighter, revealing more of the red and copper only hinted at before. Obi-Wan and his master, partner, she corrected herself, must have spent significant time in the sun recently, for his pale skin had tanned. It made him seem older, especially when paired with the personality shining in those bright, intelligent eyes. Eyes which were red-rimmed and marked by restless nights. His hands were folded in his lap. She glanced down just in time to see him attempting to conceal a nervous twitch. "What brings you to see me, Obi-Wan?" Terza asked, thinking she already knew part of the answer. "I'm having trouble sleeping," he said. Terza nodded. "I've got plenty of time until they need me again, Knight Kenobi." "Obi-Wan," he corrected, smiling. She couldn't help smiling back at him. "Very well. Obi-Wan. Why don't you tell me about it?" And he had. About the nightmares that he could never remember, the cycle they occurred on, and how he didn't dare sleep sometimes until he was sure it was over. Obi-Wan had suffered through one cycle of nightmares already when they had brought young Anakin back to the temple. This, it seemed, was cycle number 2 for the year. "Why didn't you tell me when this first happened?" she'd asked, trying not to voice her frustration. Obi-Wan had the grace to flush at the gentle rebuke. "I don't know how you feel about my experience," he'd said, choosing his words with care. "But when I dealt with these nightmares before, I didn't have to worry about anyone on a day-to-day basis but myself. If an entire week passed and I didn't sleep, it hurt no one but me. Now, it's different. I am needed, and often. I'm depended upon. My partner depends on me. I have to be able to do my job. Obi-Wan had leaned forward, an intent look on his face. I must be able to do my duty, and until this happened again, I hadn't yet realized how difficult it would be. I need to find the cause of these nightmares. They have to end. His mouth had quirked up in an endearing, self-deprecating smile. I doubt the council would be happy about tendering leave on a regular basis because of a little insomnia. She'd refrained from remarking that the council would probably bend over backwards and invert gravity for Obi-Wan if he asked, no matter the reason. The council was quite entranced by his and young Skywalker's midichlorian counts, to the point where Tirza had been driven to distraction trying to keep nosy counselors out of her hair. In the 4 years since that first discussion, they had accomplished little. Well, aside from the time three healers had almost killed Obi-Wan before anyone had realized that their attempts at breaking the mental block in his head were having disastrous results. Tirza didn't consider that an accomplishment. She'd shipped one of those healers to a permanent station in the Outer Rim afterwards. Despite that fiasco, something had affected the block. In 2 years, there had been almost no cycle to speak of, and Tirza had tentatively considered the problem to be solved. Then, 3 days ago, Obi-Wan had shown up in the ward again, with his now typical offering of tea. If Qui-Gon hadn't told her already of the cycle's return, she would have known the instant she saw him. He already looked like death warmed over. "I have a Padawan, Tirza," Obi-Wan said, his mouth set in a grim line. "Break it." "And what if we break you?" Tirza had snapped in response, not in the mood to be lulled by tea. She had not been overjoyed to learn that the damnable block was up to its old tricks again. "Well, I'd prefer we didn't break me," he'd replied, his familiar wry smile making an appearance. "But this is getting ridiculous." Tirza hated feeling helpless. She hated feeling inept, and that damn block had tried her patience long enough. She didn't want to see the day when exhaustion landed one, two, or all three members of the new team of masters and young Padawan in her ward. She chewed on the end of her stylus until the cap was shredded, then put it and the file back down on the table. Voice identify Master Healer Jail Tirza. Recognition code A1Zith41Zith. Acknowledged. Proceed, Healer Tirza. Journal entry. Classified status. File. Knight Kenobi, Obi-Wan. Galactic Standard Date, 4th month, 15th day. She picked up her abandoned wrist chrono. 9th hour. Recording. For 4 years now, I've worked with Knight Kenobi on trying to remove a Jedi-created memory block. After an unexpected 2-year lull in the cycle of nightmares the block creates, that cycle has returned. If appearances are anything to go by, it's worse than before. Or perhaps he's unused to the intensity, she added, thinking it was a distinct possibility. Were it not for some physical and mental results created by our prodding, I'd wonder if the block was designed to be opened at all. I've had my patient work with every mind healer I've had the authority to call in, with little to show for it. Knight Kenobi has shown urgent willingness to begin pushing for the situation to be resolved once more. I have one pair of healers left to try, and they're a rare set. I'll have to badger the council into calling the man, but I think it may be a worthwhile effort. Su'um Va and Ra'um Ve are new in the field, healer graduates from the Corellian Temple, but in the past 3 years alone they've racked up an astonishing number of satisfactorily resolved cases. Huh. All I should have to do is mention that Obi-Wan or Anakin's health is at stake, and I should be able to plow straight through the stubborn Gets. I bet the troll would make a fantastic striking ball. She grinned and shook her head. Computer, delete those last two sentences from the file, and then end recording. Acknowledged. File 230057, classified entry, now complete. Master Healer Jael Tirza's request has been discussed and meditated on by the full council. It was argued that removing the two requested healers from their fieldwork would possibly do more harm than good. Su'um Va and Ra'um Ve are in high demand, and there are still many that need their services. It was mentioned that when the twins finished their current assignment, they were due for rest days, and unless someone tied them down and made sure of it, they would never sleep. A master who will remain nameless motioned that an official entry should go into the council logs that all healers are insane. Motion did not carry, though not without some dispute about the nature of healers and duty. It was then argued that the sooner the healers arrived, the sooner Knight Kenobi's particular difficulty could be dealt with once and for all, and the sooner that Healer Tirza would stop pestering them. While that idea appealed to all, others still cautioned that the needs of the many must be considered above the needs of the few. For some reason, this elicited an outbreak of theory and discussion on the prophecy of the Chosen One, what roles Obi-Wan and Anakin might play, and an argument on the merits and demerits of prophecies thousands of years old. Those in the group with significantly higher intelligence recognized that the entire argument was worthless until Master Tall and her Padawan returned from Ossus, and wisely remained silent. When all considerations were weighed and measured, the council finally agreed the time had come for Su'um Va and Ra'um Ve to visit Coruscant. Mace Windu looked up from the datapad and glared at the master seated across from him.
"This is how you summarize tonight's meeting?"
Micah Geet grinned.
"I said nothing that was not true."
Mace sighed.
"I'd forgotten the necessity of strict definition sets for your job assignments." "I can't file this!"
Micah shrugged.
"You're the head of the Order. You could file a report that said nothing but flaming Kowakian monkey lizard arses, and 1,000 years from now it would stir a debate about what sort of classified mission you were referencing." "I'm not certain what disturbs me more. The fact that you're thinking about flaming monkey asses, or that I think you're right."
Micah laughed and stood up, shrugging back into his robe.
"That's nothing. You should see some of the reports Yoda filed when he got bored."
"Master?" Tall made a noise that was meant to encourage further words, but didn't stop running her fingers along the brittle parchment laid out on the table.
"Furthermore?
Furthermost? Compost?" She gritted her teeth and tried again.
"Does the council know that we've left Ossus? Or that we went to Aethor? And that we're on Arcania?" Bant asked.
Tall stopped what she was doing, turning her head partway towards the sound of Bant's rough breathing. Poor dear. The dry air of this particular library wasn't good for her Padawan in the slightest.
Why do you ask?
Well... And there was some amusement in Bat Aaron's voice. Our credit line hasn't updated. We may have to float home. Tall started swearing and didn't stop until someone three rows away attempted to hush her. It didn't work very well. Tall was too busy repackaging the damaged scroll in its environmentally controlled box to worry about shushings of any sort. I've just made a decision. From now on, you're in charge of updating the council on our whereabouts. I, apparently, cannot be trusted to calm home, calm my spouse, or remember to eat, she finished, when her stomach created an alarming gurgle. Bant laughed. Yes, Master. We can contact them after I make sure you eat. Dinner has already been arranged. You know, I'm supposed to take care of you, not the other way around, Tall attempted to grumble. It works both ways, Master, Bant said, the warmth in her voice telling Tall that her Padawan was smiling, in good humor. Shall I arrange for our return to the library tomorrow? Don't bother, Tall said, shaking her head as she sealed up the scroll's box. The pneumatic hiss told her that everything had sealed and pressurized correctly, but at this point it wouldn't do much good. It had been difficult to read the impressions in the paper, and Tall was half certain that her translations were useless. The ink was too far gone to be viewed by Bant. Unless the machines could pull the remains of the ancient script, more of Master Atka Thon's writings would be lost. Perhaps if it had been scanned 100 years ago... We're done here, Padawan. It's time to go home. I didn't think we'd found everything you wanted to, Master, Bant said, helping Tall to repack all of her scattered notes. Tall sighed. Defeat tasted sour in her mouth. We didn't. Obi-Wan Kenobi opened his eyes to darkness and wondered what had awoken him. He remained in bed, quieted his breathing, and listened for anything out of place. Rain. He glanced at the small window and watched as beads of water trickled down the transparent steel barrier. The occasional passing air car threw beams of light through the water, creating an orange symphony of reflected light. For all the time that had passed since the event that had altered his life, Obi-Wan couldn't train himself out of the habit of listening for water. Obi-Wan was tempted to sink down further into bed and ignore every responsibility he had until morning. The soft sheets were an indulgence he figured he had earned, while the quilt had been a gift from Bant. He smiled. Bant's occasional gift seemed much like pointed nursemaiding, but he could appreciate a warm blanket regardless. Rain also prompted wakefulness. He sighed, got up, and dressed in the dark. Out in the main room, clear signs of habitation were evident. There were parts scattered over the table in the common room, standing out in stark contrast against the coral the table was made from. That one had been another gift from Bant. Obi-Wan had smiled and thanked her for it, though later Qui-Gon had summed up what he thought about the table in one word. Atrocious. He stepped into his Padawan's room. Anakin's bedroom looked the most lived-in of them all, even after a bare month's occupation. There were items everywhere, with just enough organization to make things presentable. It's such a charming mix, too, Obi-Wan thought, touching the plant that hung in front of the window.
Anakin had inherited the Valeris plant, along with his new Padawan title, challenged with the task of keeping the stubborn plant alive and healthy. There was a collection of mouse droids sitting on the floor beneath the plant. They all belonged to the temple, and Anakin was their unofficial mechanic. Almost every mouse droid the Order employed had been tinkered with by Anakin for some reason or another, and the tiny machines were fiercely loyal. One shelf held only a single item, a hollow of their shared family. Shmi Skywalker stood next to Kleeg Lars, with Owen sitting on the ground in front of them, with an easy smile on his small, round face. Obi-Wan stared at them, thinking that 2 years was too long to go between visits. They were due on Coruscant at the end of the year, and Obi-Wan made a mental note to make sure the Council knew that he and Anakin were to be home for the visit. He had neglected his family once before, and it would never happen again. Obi-Wan turned his attention to the bed, and realized that Anakin was awake, sitting up and looking at him. "Annie?" "I woke up and couldn't fall back asleep," Anakin explained in a soft voice, glancing over at the water that was now streaming down the windows. "I guess I'm suffering from the same problem," Obi-Wan replied, sitting down on Anakin's bed. Anakin picked up a corner of his own quilt, a gift from his mother, and draped it over Obi-Wan's bare shoulders. "Thank you." "You're welcome," Anakin said, a thoughtful look on his shadowed features. "Do you think something's wrong?" Obi-Wan started to say no, and then sighed. "I don't know. I'm no wiser than you are, Padawan." Anakin giggled, a bright, cheerful sound at odds with the dark silence of early morning. "I wish," he said, "you'd be more sympathetic when I bomb my tests." "I had to struggle through the coursework same as you once upon a time," Obi-Wan retorted, tugging on Anakin's small Padawan braid. It was an eerie moment. He thought for certain they must have had a conversation much like this one long before. "You'll muddle through it as well." "Yeah, I know," Anakin grumbled. "I just don't like the history we're doing right now. Most of the stuff they make us read is drier than Tatooine dust." "Ah, but you have to learn it," Obi-Wan said with a smile. "After all, those who do not learn from history are doomed to repeat it." A peal of thunder broke the early morning silence, and they both glanced at the window, startled. "I'm starting to feel like a gangster," Micah Geet said, watching as Mace Windu activated the unit that would shield the room from prying minds. "Starting to?" Qui-Gon shook his head, palming the privacy switch for the windows when Mace glanced his way in silent request. The filters turned the glass smoke-colored, blocking out external light.
"I've felt that way since this whole mess started."
"We should put that feeling to work then," Micah said, thoughtful. "Make it lucrative. You know, try our hand at some gambling, some smuggling."
"All you need is a patch and you'd look the part," Qui-Gon agreed, sitting on the floor next to Yoda's chair.
He glanced around, taking a mental tally of those Mace had invited to this, one of their more unusual clandestine meetings. The full council was present, minus Master Yaddle, who had left 2 weeks ago to conduct research with Jocasta Nu at a new portion of the old library that was being excavated on Assos. He, Micah, and Tal were the usual additions. Tonight, they were joined by Bant, Tal's Padawan, along with Shakti and Quinlan Vos, two younger Jedi Knights who had long since proved their worth, as well as their ability to keep secrets. With Quinlan was his own new Padawan, a blue-skinned Twi'lek named Ayla Secura. Bant looked much more comfortable at her master's side than poor Ayla did. If it had not been un-Jedi-like to hide behind her master, the girl probably would have done so. Micah glared at Qui-Gon, and then patted the brace on his right leg.
"Don't pay any attention to him, love. He doesn't know what he's blathering about."
Adi Gallia, who had given up her seat for Micah and now sat on the floor next to Tall, rolled her eyes. "Tall, be a dear and get your mate tested for senility." Tall grinned as Micah sputtered indignantly. "I already have. He keeps confounding the healers by passing their tests every time."
"Tirza likes me," Micah whispered to Qui-Gon and Yoda. "Those tests could tell the healers I was a gibbering maniac and she'd still say I was fine."
Qui-Gon couldn't resist the comment.
"You are a gibbering maniac," he whispered back.
Micah sat back in his chair, a miffed look on his face.
"See what happens when you resign from the Council, Master Yoda? No one respects you anymore."
Yoda, who had long grown used to Master Geet's inanities, merely smiled.
"A meeting we will conduct, and then dinner we will eat. A long day it has been."
Mace sat down, relieved that Yoda had simply and quickly brought order to their meeting.
"All right, then. Computer, voice identify Mace Windu, Jedi Master. Authorization code ZetaZeta31023.
"Acknowledged. Proceed, Master Windu."
"Terminate audio and visual recordings for the Council Chamber until I give the order to recommence."
"Acknowledged. Recording for archives terminated until further notice."
Whoa.
Eeth Koth sat upright in surprise.
"Since when are we not recording these sessions?"
"Since Adi and I began our investigation into Jill Hyra's control of the crash," Mace said, grim-faced. "After what I've seen, a bit of paranoia can't hurt."
"I thought that you and Knight Kenobi were going to look into the situation originally,"
Eeth asked, a hint of annoyance on his face.
"Obi-Wan requested that he be left out of it.
He feels that his presence in any investigation, even an informal one, would be seen as a conflict of interest. Since he also has a new Padawan, I agreed with him and requested that Adi join me."
"Force bless it," Depa Balaba said, the exhaustion visible on her face quickly giving way to concern. Qui-Gon understood that she had only returned that morning from an extended mission on her home planet, and duty had called before rest. "How bad is it, Master?"
"The damage is not bad, but it's not good either."
The scowl on Mace's face became more pronounced, and they could all sense his sudden anger.
"Damn it, after what happened before, you'd think we'd know better."
"Caught with our pants down again?"
Micah scratched at the bristly hair on his chin.
"We're not infallible, Mace. You know that."
Shakti was sitting cross-legged on the floor across from Qui-Gon, one of her leku idly wrapped around her left hand. "I was given to understand that the situation in the crash was fine when Jill Hyra first took the position last year. During my last teaching rotation at that time, I saw nothing out of the ordinary. What exactly has changed?" Adi sighed, looking tired. "We have indications that she's been directing the children in her charge in the wrong direction. Half of the initiates in the advanced classes, the ones designed for the children we know will become Padawans, believe that they're going to wind up in the various cores.
Considering that most of these children gained entrance to the advanced classes due to their firm beliefs that they are meant to be Jedi, well...
Mace was shaking his head in irritation. There are a lot of younglings in the crash who are doubting their own worth. Someone has been discouraging them, and Jill Hira has the charge of most of those classes. A few initiates, when questioned by Adi, even admitted that Jill Hira has spoken to them of their failings, but most of the students are terrified that bad-mouthing a master will diminish their chances even further.
Oh, what a mess, Depa murmured, her dark eyes filled with sympathy. But there's more, isn't there?
Adi and Mace glanced at each other, both wearing near-identical expressions of regret.
Something we should have caught long before now. As you all know, the Creche Master has the authorization to override teaching and core designations for every initiate.
Qui-Gon felt himself grow pale. He was not the only one to do so.
She didn't, Depa whispered.
Mace nodded, while Adi explained. She did. I didn't catch it at first, but upon more careful review of the records, I noticed that there were... discrepancies. This was confirmed when at least 4 initiates for the week's choosing ceremony were missing when their masters went to claim them.
Shit,
Micah swore aloud.
What the actual fuck, Mace?
Mace shook his head, aggrieved.
Micah, that's why we're here. This will not be allowed to stand.
Those are, unfortunately, the only obvious cases. Shakti, we would like you to continue to review the crash records with Master Alak, Adi said.
I thought Alak had retired, Tal asked.
He's got to be pushing 160 standard by now.
He did, 20 years ago, Adi confirmed. But we needed someone neutral who's already familiar with the crash.
We don't know if any of the other masters were colluding with Jill Hira.
Eeth winced.
Oh, let's not go into that just yet. Let's finish talking about our missing initiates first. One massive headache at a time, if you please.
This entire situation is a massive headache, Evan Peel said with a scowl.
Quinlan had been absorbing the conversation with an intent look on his face.
Padawan, you were still in the creche when Jill Hira was granted the title of creche master. Did you notice anything amiss? Hear any rumors? Was anyone reassigned that shouldn't have been?
Ayla Sakura glanced around with nervous eyes, found nothing but encouragement, and finally nodded. I did, Master. It wasn't much, really. Maybe I got out before it went really bad. When that attitude, that recitation of my failings, was directed at me... She ducked her head and shrugged, her entire being screaming awkward unease. I suppose I thought it was part of our training. You know, carrying on in spite of being told that it isn't meant for you. Persistence, I guess. Quinlan smiled and tugged on Ayla's right leku, the one bound with the colored strips of leather denoting her Padawan status.
And I'm so very glad you refused to quit. Was there anything else, Padawan Sakura?
Mace asked, his voice far more gentle than his norm. Ayla thought about it in silence for a moment, before shaking her head.
I don't recall anything worse, Masters, but I've been gone from the crash for 6 months. Perhaps the disappearances did not start until after that.
Unfortunately not, Bant spoke up, her silvery eyes half-closed in visible frustration. I filed a complaint about the disappearance I know of, but it seems I complained to the wrong person.
You filed with the crash master, Tall said, and closed her eyes in realization.
Sweet force. No wonder nothing ever came of it. Please explain, Padawan Eren, Adi said, crossing her arms and giving the Mon Calamarian her full attention. I have a friend named Epona. I was her tutor originally, but when the need for it ended, we remained close. 5 months ago, she was sent to the AgriCorps. Epona was certain that she was meant to be sent home if she wasn't chosen by a master, since she was needed to help with the corals. She can speak to them really well, being Quarren as well as Jedi-trained. Anyone who can convince the corals to respond in the way we want them to is direly needed on my homeworld right now. Instead, though, she was assigned to the AgriCorps. When she voiced her concerns, Master Jill Hira insisted it was for the best.
Oh, blessed.
Mace pinched the bridge of his nose.
Does she need a way home, Padawan?
No. Bant shook her head, smiling a little. I heard from her recently. She'd been in contact with her parents, who bought out her contract in the Corps to get her home. The last I knew, she was working in the South Sea. Tall started typing on her datapad, fingers flying over the notched keypad.
Yes, I'm noting that we need to reimburse the family, she said when Adi opened her mouth to comment. This is ridiculous. That makes 5,
Yariel Poof said. He was sitting in almost complete stillness, a very unusual sight.
I must dare to say I think there will be more.
She's lucky, Micah said, chewing the end of his thumb until Tall smacked him on the arm. Mace leaned back in his chair, brow furrowed.
Yes, and she might be the only lucky one.
Jill Hira took on many of Zulus Farr's duties even before Farr's official retirement, which gives us at least 18 months of ground to cover. No masters have come to us seeking missing apprentices, but perhaps they felt that if the child was core-bound, it would not have been a productive apprenticeship anyway. He hit the arm of his chair with a fist, making Ayla jump.
It burns me to realize we got rid of one bad clan master, only to replace her with something much worse. We knew Zulus Farr's appointment was going to be a temporary solution, and when Jill Hira took so many of the duties onto herself, we looked upon it as a relief, Eeth said, shaking his head.
All of us, Mace, not just you. It's not your fault any more than it is ours. If only Zulus hadn't been so close to retirement already. But her health has been poor for years. Adi sighed. And at least Prince Elka wasn't intentionally cruel. The woman just firmly believed that every single one of the initiates in her charge would become a Jedi Knight. Oppo Rancisis blew out a breath that stirred the massive beard he sported.
Yet ultimately, that did much harm, Master Galia. We noticed this damage when she had only taught one generation of the Froxen clan. 3 in her charge had the strength to be Jedi Knights. The others would have made excellent healers, pilots, mechanics, farmers, support staff, and some have done so. Others were too bitter to take on the duties they were originally meant for. It is fortunate for the Order that bitterness, and the loss of valuable personnel, was the only result of her care.
Adi nodded.
I know, Master Oppo.
Brynce told her charges so many times that they were to be knights that the letdown was too great. Some of the children understood when we explained it to them that Master Elka had done them a disservice. But the others, despite the training our children receive, they are still children. They have hopes, fears, and doubts that sometimes all the Jedi training in the world can't alleviate. Fortunately, Master Elka still believes we did her a favor by taking the Froxen clan away from her. She found a Padawan less than a week later, and they're a wonderful team, Depa pointed out. If I remember correctly, they're to conduct a review of the new Kamasi colony next week. Sisi Tin, who of late rarely spoke at all, tilted his head to one side.
Kenobi was one of Master Elka's students, wasn't he?
Yes, Qui-Gon replied. He'd almost forgotten that detail. The way their lives had changed 4 years ago, certain aspects of Obi-Wan's childhood and training had faded into the far corners of memory.
Though, as I understand it, he was one of the three.
Even with that knowledge, you still almost managed to make one of the gravest mistakes of your life, Tall said with blunt honesty. She had forgiven him for his mistreatment of Obi-Wan and the entire Melita Don situation, but she had no plans on ever letting him forget it. He nodded in quiet agreement, unashamed to admit that it was true.
He was still damaged by Elka's insistence, I think, Qui-Gon said. Obi-Wan understood well enough that I was supposed to be his teacher. Even then, he trusted the Force more than most of us ever learned to.
If there was a note of pride in his voice, it couldn't be helped. Obi-Wan's strength in the Force was as true as Qui-Gon's own past stubborn idiocies.
But his ability to trust in others was impaired. I doubt Melita Don would have happened in quite the same way otherwise.
Yoda seemed surprised.
See your point, I do. But damaged you were also, Master Qui-Gon. Trusted little you did, and dark were your thoughts. A burden the Mark of Xanatos had been.
He didn't know he was going to say the words until suddenly he did.
I loved him, Qui-Gon said,
the first time he had ever admitted such a thing out loud. It was easier to admit now, with the passage of years and the ease of the weight of guilt. His second Padawan had been a mischievous little spirit clothed in pale skin and ebony hair. Xanatos had been a joy to teach, a joy to be with, until the mischievousness ever in his soul and eyes had become darkness. Easy to love, harder to let go of, even when the twisted creature bearing his Padawan's face had tried to kill him.
Damn, Qui-Gon! Here we thought we had our Maverick pegged, and then you bring that out of the closet.
Micah was shaking his head.
I need a drink. The past is past, or however the saying goes,
Mace said, trying to get things back on track. Qui-Gon gave him a grateful look. There was only so much dwelling on that point in his life that he could handle. Adi spoke next. We're going to wind up with a whole slew of Xanatos lookalikes unless we put some extra effort and time in with our initiates. Obi-Wan has already taken charge of the advanced lightsaber classes until we can find a replacement teaching master, and I'm thinking about asking you, Mike.
Advanced lightsaber techniques?
Micah looked thoughtful.
ALT would be a nice occupation for me when Tal's out with the band. As long as I could count on some of you to help with demonstrations.
He paused as several of those present immediately volunteered.
Then I'll do it.
It'd be damn difficult for me to teach ALT when I can't do half of that shit myself anymore.
Language, Mike. Tall nudged him, though she was more amused than annoyed.
Is that a good idea? Evan Peel asked. This temple has three of the greatest duelists of all time housed within its walls, and two of them are sitting in this room.
Mace and Qui-Gon shared a glance, both of them shrugging.
Neither considered himself to be the best example of lightsaber dueling, even with Mace's mastery of the Vapad, and Qui-Gon the only master in the temple who could occasionally defeat Obi-Wan in an open spar.
Peel snorted at their lack of enthusiasm.
The children might see Obi-Wan's techniques and believe that they're beyond help. Force knows I can't keep up with that man.
If you'd seen Obi-Wan work with the Kreshlings, that idea would fade quickly, Kai Adi Mundi said with a grin. They practically flock to the man.
Of course they do, Tal said with an amused laugh. He bribes them with sweets.
And what better way to earn a place in a child's heart? Micah asked. Hell, I'd step up to the mat and perform advanced maneuvers from the seventh kata if I thought I could get free food out of it.
There was quiet laughter as Tal pretended to note that information on her data pad.
We'll get you to converting the rest of the katas yet, love, she said, smiling at her mate.
Challenge accepted.
Micah had shocked his primary healer by converting the first form for his own use. It was difficult and demanding, but the former combat master had successfully finished the form and added it to the archives for those with injuries similar to his own.
Those concerns aside, Obi-Wan is the best choice until Micah is ready to take over, Mace continued. Many of the initiates in ALT are fast approaching the cutoff point for being taken as Padawans, and I think he may be able to start correcting Jill Hira's damage. Possibly even direct a few masters in their direction. To lose the older children in that group would be a terrible waste.
I agree, Plo Koon said. I trust your judgment for the ALT, Mace, but the hand-to-hand classes have as much potential for damage control. As I'm between Padawans and pilot trainees at the moment, I'd like to spend time with those initiates. Master Dubarab is competent, but we all know he's overworked, what with our current combat master on permanent disability.
I would like to retire from the duty, you know that, Micah said, looking frustrated. There just aren't candidates for the position. The job needs a broad range of skills, and those who have those talents are either dedicated to field missions, or, frankly, just don't want to do it. And you already said no, Plo, so you don't get to complain.
Plo chuckled through his mask. Perhaps it's because none of us wish to see you retired. You would become lazy and fat.
Before Micah steals his mate's datapad and throws it at you, Plo, thank you for volunteering. I was not sure who to ask, Mace said. Qui-Gon, in Padawan Skywalker's absence, will you please tell the others what he related to you about his last year in the crash? I'd like to get the last of the Padawan witnessed reports out of the way before we continue.
Qui-Gon half-smiled.
Well, I'm sure the gossip mill will have informed you all by now about the confrontation in the commissary that Jill Hira instigated.
Luminara unduly witnessed it, Adi interjected, for the benefit of the others. She told me that Jill Hira seemed angry, thwarted even, by young Anakin's new apprenticeship. She said she couldn't understand why. Anyone with half a brain and a gram of sensitivity can tell that Obi-Wan and Anakin share a close connection. Qui-Gon nodded his agreement.
It was the first I'd seen of it, but Anakin says that Jill Hira's attitude towards him had been strange for months. He said that she was also subjecting Obi-Wan to ill treatment, but Obi-Wan refused to let it become an issue, as it was nothing to complain about.
Nothing to complain about my ass, Micah muttered. That boy wouldn't complain even if he were set on fire.
Anakin says that there would be times that Jill Hira praised his abilities and his future as a Jedi Knight. Others, he would be told that his mechanical aptitude would serve him well in the Corps. At first, he didn't notice Jill Hira mentioning these things to anyone but himself, and took it much as you did, Ayla, Qui-Gon said, glancing at the shy Twi'lek Padawan. A challenge to be met with persistence and faith in the Force. However, he also says that it is something he witnessed Jill Hira saying to many of the other students, with increasing frequency. Initiate Saini was also one of her targets, but some of you know how pragmatic she can be. She's yet another one that you could set on fire and not expect to hear a word of complaint from, Deppa said with a smile. Adi smiled in rueful agreement. Anakin is willing to make his account official, Qui-Gon? When he nodded, she glanced at Mace. That's three complaints, my friend. Mace glanced around the circle at the assembled counselors, each of whom nodded in turn.
Then Jill Hira is suspended from her duties as Creche Master, pending the conclusion to our investigation.
What shall be done with Jill Hira in the meantime? Tal asked, curious.
She's free to do as she wishes, so long as she stays away from the crash, Mace said, and waved one hand in the air in frustration when there was a rumble of protest. No, I don't like it either, but we still have to follow our own laws as well as those of the Republic. Legally, she's done nothing wrong. In any court of law, Lawfla Jill Hira could argue that she was merely exercising her own judgment to accomplish the task that we assigned her, and that would be the end of it.
But, he continued, with a quick, harsh smile, if she wishes to remain a Jedi of the Order, Jill Hira is not to perform any service until she receives a full psychological exam from the healers, with at least three members of the Council present to witness it. Now that I can agree to, Deppa said, looking approvingly upon her former master. Yoda had been listening while resting his chin on the top of his gimmer stick. He lifted his head, a peaceful look on his face.
More time in the creche I wish to have. Instructor I have always been, but do more I wish to. Spending too much time in this chamber I am. Now open the position of Creche Master is?
He asked, glancing at Mace to confirm what had already all but been declared.
It is now, Mace said. Considering it, are you?
Yoda nodded in agreement.
You're really thinking about it?
Eth asked with a frown.
You're the master most in demand, inside the temple and out. Would you have the time to devote to it?
Yoda turned his head and glared at the other master.
Plenty of time we all have. Consumed by trivial matters we each allow ourselves to be. Too much of our attention the Senate earns, and too little do we devote to our own. Bad this is. Bad for the Jedi. Intentional could it also be?
He added the last as a question, but it was clear to Qui-Gon that it was something Yoda had already considered. It was obvious that Eeth Koth, however, had not. He sat back, his frown becoming more thoughtful.
Could it be? He would be the first to call himself paranoid, but Obi-Wan thinks that this might be intentional, Mace said, gaining everyone's attention. He suggested that we may wish to interview key support staff, and went so far as to mention optimal shielding.
Those gathered in the council chamber shared a moment of tense silence.
Most of them were aware that Obi-Wan had gone through something hellish. Qui-Gon could see the concern in more than one face that this might be a precursor to that dire event Obi-Wan was refusing to speak of. It is the fourth year, after all, Qui-Gon thought, chilled. Whatever it was, it will be soon. He was not looking forward to finding out what had left his partner struggling with that thrice-bedamned cycle of nightmares.
"We shall talk to the Clan Masters. All of them," Sicey declared. "If our Clan Masters are the Jedi we believe them to be, they will tell us if anything is wrong."
"Shouldn't they have done that already?"
Micah shook his head.
"I mean, we know these people. Some of us are young enough that we still have teachers in the creche. They should have told us about this shit."
Depa, who had been regarding them all with a thoughtful look on her face, said, "Maybe they've been trying to. Maybe we haven't been listening." She ignored the faint sounds of refusal and kept speaking. "Master Yoda has already said it. We've let ourselves become consumed by other matters and pay no attention to our own. It doesn't even matter if it's intentional, or if we're being manipulated by outside sources. We are still guilty of compliance. This is still our mess. We will fix it, and then we will seek out what may or may not be. I suspect more of you will find your way down to the creche in the coming weeks," Shakti said with a smile. Qui-Gon suspected that every counselor would be abandoning the tower as long as duty would permit. They all understood, implicitly, that the initiates represented the future of the Jedi Order. It had been too long since Qui-Gon had visited the creche himself. Perhaps it was time to resurrect the old habit.
"Let's table that matter until we know more," Mace said, and was met with a general air of agreement. "Next order of business."
"Oh, Force, there's more?" Aayla squeaked, and then blushed violet when everyone looked at her. She ducked her head and mumbled, "Sorry."
Quinlan grinned. "That's okay. If you hadn't said it, I was about to."
"Behave, both of you," Adi said with a faint smirk. "It's important, and you'll want to hear this. Tal?" Tal let her gaze drift around the room, a habit that could not be broken. "Some of you know, some of you don't. But I suppose this is the meeting that makes it official. Master Yoda and Master Windu gave me leave to study the prophecy of the Chosen One a few years ago."
"Heavy reading, Master Tal."
Quinlan whistled. His attention had indeed been captured, though his Padawan just looked confused. Tal smiled. "The interest was based on suspicions the Council and others have that the one the prophecy speaks of may already be among us." Shakti looked up in surprise.
"You mean the boy? Padawan Skywalker?"
"No," Kayati disagreed.
"Kenobi."
"Whoa, that's enough of that," Tal said, holding up her hands to cut off an argument before it could begin. "We're not here to begin that particular discussion. You lot can debate it amongst yourselves until your heads fall off, but not before I'm finished." Kayati and Shakti subsided, and Qui-Gon hid his own grin as Tal glared, satisfied there was silence. "Now then, it may fuel your discussions later, but part of my interest in the prophecy came from a poem that Obi-Wan wrote when he was finishing off his educational requirements after his knighting. The entire tone screamed a warning to me, and after sharing it with Master Yoda, he agreed with me.
If you're interested in the poem itself, it is in the archives at Master Kitatai's insistence.
If Knight Kenobi managed to impress him,
then I'm impressed, Ayla muttered, an awed look on her face. Kitatai was the bane of the Padawans for his strict, demanding course, and his complete willingness to fail anyone who he felt did not live up to his exacting standards. The fact that many beings were not equipped to be poets had never occurred to the bone-thin master. Tall smiled in Ayla's direction before continuing. There were also thoughts raised by our other resident expert on the prophecy of the Chosen One, Tall said, tilting her head in Qui-Gon's direction. He happened to create the current coursework on the subject.
So what made you think prophecy anyway? Quinlan asked.
There was a look of intense concentration on his face. Given his friendship with Obi-Wan, it was possible Quinlan was gaining answers to many questions he'd never quite dared to ask.
Anakin's midichlorian count when he came to the temple was 23,000,
Qui-Gon said, which made Ayla's eyes grow huge.
Great singing gods, Shakti whispered. That's impossible.
Nothing is impossible, Evan Peel countered. Just highly improbable.
How is it we've never heard anything about this? Quinlan wanted to know, the frown line between his eyes deepening. Because Obi-Wan asked us, for Anakin's sake, to keep it quiet, Bant answered him, giving him a stern look. And we will. Quinlan held up his hands.
I will. That's no problem. My next question, then. 12.5 before his knighting. 22,000 after,
Qui-Gon answered him.
And he doesn't know.
Quinlan looked astonished.
22! Force people? How the hell do you keep something like that a secret? More importantly, why? Doesn't he deserve to know?
Honestly, the man has enough to stress about, Tall said, before Qui-Gon could reply in his own defense. I don't think throwing a prophecy on his head is the way to make him relax, especially when he already knows that his Padawan is a candidate for the prophecy's focus, too.
Okay.
Quinlan rubbed his face with his hands.
Master Qui-Gon, please continue. I'd like to know more. Unfortunately, there's not much more that I can add. Tall has discovered that my knowledge is incomplete, Qui-Gon said. When I performed the initial research on the prophecy, I only went back a few hundred years. Not the brightest approach, but it was the thesis of the Padawan I once was, and he was not the most intelligent of creatures. For the purpose it serves, the coursework is fine as it stands, but we needed to know more.
Tall nodded. Nice for our students to know, but mostly irrelevant for the lives they plan to lead. I've been digging for almost 4 years now, and what I can tell you is both interesting and frustrating. Please bear with me. I need to recount some history first. Most of us know and understand that the temple on Coruscant has been here for several thousand years, but what many do not remember is that it only began serving as the central temple just 1,000 years ago, after the conclusion of the last Sith War, Tull said. That was when the Sith were exterminated during the final battle on Rusan. This is also when the Jedi became more closely involved with the Republic Senate, as it was believed at the time that if the Order had worked more closely with the Galactic Government, the Sith incursions would have been dealt with much sooner and war would have been avoided.
Doubtful, Lyga said.
Tall raised an eyebrow, but otherwise ignored him. This is also when the prophecy of the Chosen One,
already thousands of years old, became common knowledge in the Order. The prophecy has been taught with the standard Jedi curriculum for the last 700 years, at Master Yoda's insistence when he attained his mastery. Yoda raised one ear in acknowledgement.
Important, I knew it would be.
The problem lies in the fact that the meaning and form of the prophecy had already changed dramatically from the original writing, Tall said. We've always learned it in basic, but I've been able to uncover that the original prophecy was written in Galenor. And if you know anything about Galenor... Qui-Gon closed his eyes, rubbing the bridge of his nose with two fingers.
The Galenor definition of numbers is more theoretical than mathematical.
Damn.
Tall smiled.
Yes?
When a Galenor refers to one, it's only a vague possibility that he means one in number. But one is also their method for denoting a speaker. And if you bring math into it, one is typically used to mean three.
Oh yes, I remember that. The triangle fetish, Leith said, folding his hands together. They use triangles in just about everything. Clothing, housing, their religious symbols all incorporate triangles in some manner. It's supposed to be based on their belief that only three working as one can do anything of true importance.
He paused.
Now that I'm thinking about it, I think Galenor marriages work that way, too. The sex of the three ultimately doesn't matter, just as long as there are three.
Adi grinned.
Do they ever get anything done?
Eith shrugged.
I've no idea.
Seems like if I had two mates to worry about, I'd never have time to breathe.
One mate is enough work.
Well worth it, though. Tall glanced up at Micah, a warm smile on her face, before she turned her attention back to the group. With the prophecy also came the One Master, One Padawan addition to the Jedi Code. It's interesting how specific they get in the old records. A Padawan may have many masters, but never should a master have more than one Padawan.
Huh? Why? Ayla asked, curiosity overriding shyness.
From the war the idea came, Yoda explained, giving Ayla a pleased look. Many masters were there, and many students they each had. Lost students to the dark side these masters did. Blame was cast. Sith preyed upon the groups, sensing weakness in the master-padawan bonds.
Qui-Gon studied the ancient master, knowing there was much he was not saying.
How many were known to fall?
Tall closed her eyes, consulting her own internal databank of memory. Five are mentioned specifically.
More than 10 there could not have been, Yoda admitted. Though blame was cast upon the groups. Unknown it is if the fallen Jedi were taught that way.
The records make a big deal of it, and try to give the impression that the problem was greater than it actually was, Tall said. Only 5 names are ever mentioned that I recall. Still, it's an injunction that has stuck with us. Qui-Gon snorted in complete disbelief.
You mean to tell me that the Rule of One was established because 5 apprentices, out of tens of thousands of Jedi, fell to the dark side?
Mace looked uncomfortable.
Qui-Gon, you know the logic makes sense. If 2 people are working closely together, they are more attuned to each other's needs than one teacher working with many students. Oh, really? Like it worked with Xanatos?
Qui-Gon recognized his own anger and calmed himself.
Tell me, and be honest, how many of you really believed that Zan would fail his trials?
Yoda sighed.
A good master Xanatos had. Made his own decisions, he did. Lies with Xanatos the blame does. For his own path did he walk. His own choices did he make. If trained in a group, still those decisions Xanatos might have made. Little difference enough with those recriminations make, my friend.
Qui-Gon breathed out the rest of his frustration.
You're right. But I still find myself asking if those masters made the right decision 1,000 years ago. We know that our numbers are not even half of what they once were. We lose many children that would be knights if only more teachers were available. Is it right to see that potential lost for such a trite reason?
He thought of how he had almost left Obi-Wan to the core, and the complete waste that would have been.
Are we really better off this way?
Yoda tilted his head to one side.
As Master Windu says, maybe, maybe not. A discussion for another time, that is. Changes it would bring.
Yoda cackled in obvious delight. Qui-Gon glanced at him in surprise. He hadn't expected to find an ally in Yoda for this particular subject. Then again, Yoda had always loved a challenge.
Continue, please, Master Tall, Yoda invited.
I've been attempting to find the original prophecy, Tall said. But I don't believe the original document still exists. If it's not in our archives, then likely it was destroyed during the cataclysm on Ossus. However, Master Aben Saltur is the name most associated with the prophecy. He was a survivor of that era's Great Sith War, and well known for his precognitive abilities. He was also Galenori, which makes him the most likely candidate to have authored the prophecy. I had hoped that finding further records of his writings would lead me to a copy of the prophecy written in its original Galenor.
I take it that hasn't been the case, Adi ventured.
Like a speeder crashing into a wall, Tall said in frustration. The damn trail just ends. I haven't found any record of the prophecy even being mentioned prior to the last war. Micah leaned forward so that he could rest his hands on her shoulders.
It's going to be another trip out into the wilds of the galaxy then, love.
Yes, but I'll wait until the issues with the crash are straightened out. The more I consider the matter, the more I think that we'll need all hands for a few months. I'm horrible with babies, Tall admitted, but there are plenty of book lovers among the older initiates. Quinlan cleared his throat.
Just to make certain, it seems to me that you want those of us in this room to be aware of the prophecy, aware of its possible targets, and... what? Alert for big dramatic changes?
Honestly, that about sums it up, Adi said with a smile. You and Shakti see the subtle, the quiet, the things that can creep up on us if we're too busy staring at the picture as a whole. Quinlan nodded.
Good to know. And no midichlorian bitching, Micah added. Let's keep that bit under wraps, hmm?
Quinlan blew out a long sigh.
Sure. I don't think I could handle that conversation anyway. Before this gets out of hand, I declare this meeting adjourned, Mace said. Go home, people. You'll be kept informed of everything spoken about this evening.